Hello and welcome to a landmark episode of the Sprues and Brews podcast, because this is episode 50.
That's mental.
The big 5-0.
Does that mean we've nearly been doing this a year?
Yeah, I guess we kind of had a few big breaks. It's only really been in the last maybe 6 months that we've done it regular.
Right.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So it's 50 episodes in total, though, since we ever started this podcast. This week, there's just the two of us. Myself, I'm Dave, and Jay.
Hello.
No Matt this week, because he is fighting Skaven in Florida.
So we've got no news section, no feature section. We're just going to skip straight to the top three.
Yeah. We do have news. We don't have a feature this week, but we've got quite a lot to talk about in the hobby updates.
Yeah, yeah.
And we have got so many top three choices from the community, and some of them are awesome. So that's to come later on. Speaking of the top three, because obviously we've got the Space Marine Codex currently on pre-order, we decided to have our top three Space Marine heroes. Now, I did mean for this just to be like the good guys, but unfortunately Twitter seemed to have other ideas.
Well, that's okay, because I'm not fully good as well.
Oh, okay. So you got some Heretic Astartes.
Yeah, I just went for the Astartes keyword.
Right. Maybe I should have been more specific when it comes to keywords for the top threes. But never mind. All mine are good guys anyway, depending on which way you view it. This is our weekly Sprues and Brews podcast. We start every episode with our hobby updates. So, Jay, what have you been up to in the last 7 days since the podcast?
It's been actually quite a good week for the hobby for me. So, on the painting and modelling side, I've been working on a conversion. So we've got the Purple Sparkly Unicorns tournament coming up in September.
Mm-hmm.
And I had in my head, when we were figuring this out, what my list was going to be. I was going to take Gulliman, some Intercessors, a Librarian, and then a Tank and Dreadnought, just because I really like Gulliman. He's probably not that great in 1,250 points without all the support around him, but that was the plan. And then, after I'd started painting my Intercessors and putting all that together, the Space Marine Codex was revealed, and then released on pre-order. So that changes things now, because there's so many new models and things that I want to take. The new Dreadnought, the Invictus, is it?
Invictus Warsuit.
Yeah, it looks fantastic. I think it looks fantastic, so I want at least one of them in the list. I really like the Eliminators, which are the Sniper Marines. I'm not sure yet whether I want to take the Snipers or the Las Fusils, the anti-tank. I don't know yet. So that made me think, well, if I'm taking Gulliman, that's a lot of points in 1250. I could get rid of him and take someone else and then free up some points. So I dug out my Marnus Calgar and Vitrix Honor Guard box, and I thought, well, what, rather than building Marnus Calgar, I might convert him. So I've been converting up the Marnus Calgar when I've got him. Yeah, I've given him like a big Thunder Hammer. I don't even know whether this is a legal weapons option. I've read Intercessors can take Thunder Hammers now. Intercessor Sergeants. So if the Sergeants can have Thunder Hammers, I'm pretty sure a Chapter Master can take one, but we'll find out.
Death Watch Primaris Captain can.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. So it would make sense for a Space Marine.
Well, we'll find out. We'll find out soon enough. If not, I'll use him as Marnus Calgar. And to be fair, I'm half tempted to use him as Marnus Calgar now because he's on the big base.
Yeah.
So he's a Marnus Calgar conversion. So instead of the two fists, he's basically got an open hand and a Thunder Hammer. And I've changed the backpack a little bit to get rid of the gun feeds because he hasn't got a weapon in his hands. So I've been building him and also putting some base coats down on some other Intercessors just behind you there, Dave.
Yep.
So hoping to get those finished soon. I've also been building a lot of Warcry. So I built all the Warcry scenery from the box, the starter set. I built the Untamed Beasts, who are, after building them, I'm really, really impressed with those models. They're really, really cool and dynamic. I've also built my Corvus Cabal, which was the other Warcry warband I've got.
This is like your main warband at the moment.
That's the warband I'm using at the moment, yeah, my main one, yeah. So these will be the first ones to get paint on them after I finish the Ultramarines.
Yeah.
So that's on the building and painting side. I don't know if you want me to talk about all the other stuff we've done.
Yeah, I think it's a nice segue into what else we've been doing.
Well, you tell me first what you've been building and painting,
okay,
and then I'll tell you what else I've been doing afterwards.
Okay, so let's start with 40k, seeing as that's how you started. So I've been racking my brain over what to take to this 40k Purple Sparkly Unicorns tournament, because the funds aren't really there to be buying anything. No new armies. Yeah. So I was looking at what I've got, and I built a few lists built around AdMech. so I don't have much of them left to paint. I didn't want to take Ultramarines because I'm not happy with their paint scheme, plus you're taking Ultramarines. Tyranids I toyed with, but I just don't think they're very competitive. And like when you look at all the rerolls and stuff you get with your shooting attacks, my Tyranids will be dead by the time they get into combat.
So far, that's the experience we've had with your Tyranids.
Yeah, and the last time I played with them, I played your Tau. And I mean, Tau's obviously always going to be a hard matchup, but I just got absolutely...
To be fair, killed. Though, you do very well against my Custodes.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
But they are a more close combat oriented army.
So, anyway, I think I've settled on Death Guard, because I've got quite a lot of Death Guard from Conquest.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've written a list. No special characters. Very Plague Marine heavy. Instead of going Poxwalkers.
Interesting.
And quite a few tanks. So I've got a Lord of Contagion leading it. I've got 3 units of Plague Marines with various weapons. I've got a unit of Death Shroud Terminators. I've got a Playcaster. I've got a Noxious Blightbringer. And then I've got a whole host of vehicles. So I've got the floated bloat drone, Blight drone. I've got the small... What's it called? The
one with the melters on it.
Yeah, the Myptic Blight Hauler.
Yeah.
And then I built up from Conquest last night, which took me a lot longer than I expected it was going to be. I built the Plague Crawler with the big mortar on it.
Yeah.
And I was torn for ages to either give it the Entropy Cannons, which are like las cannons, or the Plague Spitters, which are like flamers. I went for the Entropy Cannons in the end because I wanted the high damage.
Anti-tank, yeah.
The only downside to them is the heavy one, and his base ballistic skill is 4+.
So you're moving and firing on 5s.
And as soon as he loses 6 wounds, his ballistic skill drops again.
The thing is with that unit, though, is it's got quite long range on its mortar, and the entropy cannons are 30-odd inches, are
36 inches.
Yeah, so you can just leave it stationary at the on
and
your
maybe
board.
And maybe in turn one, I can just do a load of damage with it, maybe take out a knight or something. So that's the list I'm currently got. And the good thing about this list as well is I've just got some Plague Marines and a tank to paint.
And your Death Guard colour scheme is actually quite quick to paint, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's one of the nicest armies I've painted recently. I really like my Death Guard.
I like that. I like the Death Guard as well. I think they're quite an interesting army to use.
The Death Shroud Terminators and Lord Contagion can take full advantage of the new Shock Assault rule as well.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Because they'll get +1 attack when they charge.
So this was something that was announced, was it, after the podcast last week?
No, we spoke about it on the podcast last week. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, you get +1 attack when you charge.
Shock
That's
assault,
Heretic Astartes, your normal Astartes. The new Beta Bolter... Well, I say new, it's been out for a while now. The Beta Bolter rule is pretty much redundant on Death Guard because they get their extended range rapid fire anyway.
Yeah.
Because they're
well,
slow.
Well, you get an extra 6 inches on that then, because 18 inches, isn't it, at the moment for Death Guard? They can move and fire their bolters at 18 inches.
Yeah.
Yeah, twice.
Twice.
Yeah. But now you can move... Well, no, you are still interesting because you have to stay still and fire them twice at 24 inches. But you can still move and fire them twice at 18 inches.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's still cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the list I'm going to try and get painted. We've got a couple of weeks to do it.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm going to try and concentrate on next. That's all my 40k. I'll tell you what was a bit of a curveball. I wondered about, because I really don't like my Ultramarines paint scheme. I did it a few years ago now, and I'm not
afraid. Yeah, 6-7 years ago, wasn't it?
Respraying them all.
Yeah.
Respraying them all, hopefully not lose too much detail.
Yeah.
Doom's Dark Angels.
Interesting. Now, your Ultramarines are the old tactical marines, not Primaris.
They're Primaris.
Oh, are they Primaris?
They're all Primaris. And I've got a unit of 10 Hellblasters.
Yeah, very...
Unpainted.
Yeah.
So they're completely bare plastic.
I would do that, especially with the preview in the back of White Dwarf this month, which is Dark Angels.
I did build some Intercessors with Deathwatch shoulder pads, so I'd have to prize them off, replace them with normal Primaris pads. But I could do, and I'd have to repaint a tank. It's a lot of painting, even with contrast.
To get ready for the tournament, yes.
So I think for the tournament, it's probably a no-go.
No.
But I might try and respray them anyway once I've done the Death Guard, and maybe do, because I don't think this is really... Part putting in the news, but we put on the website this week that we've got the new White Dwarf coming out soon. The issue after that, so it'll be September's issue, it's got Primaris Dark Angels in it.
Yeah.
Now the Dark Angels already have a codex with Primaris.
Yeah.
We're expecting an FAQ to bring all the new stuff in it, so I don't know what's going to be in this issue of White Dwarf.
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, there are rules in White Dwarf, so whether they have some new rules,
because maybe an updated codex is a little bit away.
I mean, It goes without saying, the Blood Angels, the Space Wolves, the Dark Angels, they're going to get the new gear that the Space Marines have got.
They've already revealed that they're getting everything.
Yeah. So are they getting that day one in a PDF?
Yeah, in an FAQ.
So the Dark Angels will also get that PDF. So it must be something else.
There must be something else. I don't think this would be... I mean, a few people said on Twitter, oh, the Lion rumours are going to kick back up. One pot potential is for either is it Ezekiel or Azrael to get Primaris miniatures.
Yeah, there's also the library, the chaplain, isn't there? I can't remember, the interrogator chaplain.
Yeah,
that's one thing I was thinking, a new character for them, but you would have thought that would come with the book. Yeah. Maybe it's the book.
Maybe it is the book. I mean, it wouldn't take much for the Dark Angel, Space Wolves and Blood Angels just to get a Mark II 8th edition book.
No, keep them happy as well.
Yeah.
I'm baffled by that. I mean, what baffled me even more was underneath the text, above the text that said Dark Angels Primaris next month, was a big knight.
Yeah.
Dark Angels are getting knights.
So I think that'll be a project for after the tournament.
I've always had a soft spot
for Dark Angels. So I think that might be a project for the rest of the year. Moving on to, I've got nothing Age of Sigmar to talk about. My Khorne stuff hasn't arrived yet, so I've not been able to do anything with them. I have, however, built my Iron Golems for Warcry, and I started painting them. Yeah. So I painted the Ogre Breacher, who's awesome in the game.
Solid.
And I've just got the base to finish on my Drillmaster, and all the rest of them have got the skin done. So they're going to have to go on hold now, though, because I really need to prioritise the Death Guard, but then I'll go back to them. Yeah. I painted them very much... These are basically like tester models for my Khorne.
Yeah.
It's going to be my Khorne paint scheme, and I'm so happy with it.
You're having these in your Khorne army as well.
I think they will be slotted in, because they're only 70 points, and they're good objective holders. They can't attack for Toffee, and they're not going to be able to take advantage of any of the Khorne goodness. But so for 70 points, and if they set on an objective, they're rerolling the saves. So,
yeah, as usual.
They're cheap. So I think that's what I'm going to do with them. Yes, obviously, I've got my own golems built. You got your Corvus Cabal built. So it was only right that we had a game.
Yes.
Or two.
Yeah. So, yeah, we've... the rule book is really, really good. But the rules are quite simple. It doesn't take long to get through the rule book.
When you were reading them out, when we were setting the game up...
Yeah.
I thought there was quite a lot involved. But when you actually start rolling dice...
Yeah.
You soon, very, very quickly... I mean, turn one activation, this just makes sense.
Yeah, and it's not that doesn't detract from the quality of the game. It's still a really, really interesting and tactical game. It's not bogged down with loads of rules.
Yeah.
So you don't have to worry too much about... I mean, you look on the board, there's a lot of scenery on the board. You know, moving around the scenery, navigating the obstacles and things like that. Really, really simple.
Yeah.
Really, really straightforward. So you can just concentrate on the game. We can talk about from, setting up the game, playing the game, because when you start the game, you roll off to see who has... the first thing you do, is you split your warband up into groups, battle groups, don't you? And this was a bit... Because when we first started, we had no idea what these battle groups meant. Daggers, shields, and hammers.
Yeah.
So you have to basically split your warband up into those groups. There are some restrictions, so I think... Is it the shields need to have... You can have no more than a third in each group, and shields have to have at least three or something like that. And so you do that, then you roll off to see who has priority, and then you reveal what kind of battle you're playing. So you have to do all of that without knowing what you're getting yourself into, basically. I thought it's a really neat way of setting up the game. So there's basically four little decks of cards, isn't there?
Yeah.
You've got a... let's open them up. So the first thing you uncover is your terrain deployment one, which I'm just trying to find now.
It's going to be the last one that you choose, you know that.
Yeah. So this is like a little map, which... I mean, how many are there? There must be about...
There's loads.
30 or 40 cards there. With little maps on, which show you the battlefield, and a bird's eye view of the battlefield with all the terrain on it. So you basically draw one of these, and you set up the battlefield like that. So it takes away all the hassle of moving scenery around, so you're getting a good game. It just does it for you. A bit like the New Age of Sigmar General's Handbook 2019. Yeah. So that's how you set your battlefield up. Great. Then you have a look at what your actual victory... your actual objective is. So there's a ton of these as well, and these basically just describe the mission you're playing. So we've played two missions so far. So the first one was basically we had to destroy each other's hammers.
Yes.
So this is where you learn whether you've split your warband up well or not. So I think in the first game, you had all your damage dealers in the hammers, which was a bit of a double-edged sword for you, because those characters were quite good, but you didn't want to really commit them because they were my target, whereas I had a lot of weak, fast people.
Really, the guys who had put in the shields with the higher toughness but weren't really dealing damage, they would have been perfect hammers because I could have kept them safer whilst my damage dealers just run forward and smash face.
So we've had another game, and we think that you do set up your warband blind like that without knowing what the victory condition is. If any listeners can correct us on that, I think that's how you play it. I mean, it would be easier if you knew what your victory condition was than to go back and change your warband. So, but maybe that's the point.
Maybe the whole point is so that people can't be taken advantage. Yeah.
So that's your victory. In the second game we played, where there was an attacker and a defender, and as a defender you had to keep your hammers alive, and as an attacker you had to try and kill them. And basically, if either of those conditions were met by the end of turn four, that would determine who had won. But there's other ones. There's ones like here, the gauntlet, where basically you have an attacker and a defender again. One of the battlefield edges is an escape route, and the defender has to get half of his warband off. And so there's a good mixture of missions there. We've only played two so far. I'm looking forward to going through all of these, Dave.
Yeah, so am I. The two we played so far have been really close and really fun. But the next part, I think it's going to be the next part.
Well, yeah, then it's deployment, isn't it?
This is cool, because this really, when you think about your free battle groups, this really throws a spanner in the works of any kind of game plan before you even start.
So once again, there's about 30 or 40 of these cards, and they have names like the Duel, Massacre, Blind Fight, Stranglehold, Encircle, the Hunt. And basically these give you another bird's eye view of the battlefield minus the scenery, and they have icons on for the different
battle groups.
So shield, red hammers, red daggers, blue shields, blue hammers, blue daggers. Basically, the person who wins the roll-off chooses whether they want to be blue or red. So obviously, depending on what the victory conditions are, this will determine which deployment you want to take. So some of them, for example, start with all of the battle groups on the battlefield at different points. Some of them say, for example, on this one, the Duel, the red hammer group only comes in the corner at the start of round two.
Yeah.
So you may get reinforcements arriving at different points through the battle. What's also quite unique about these ones are that you're spread across the battlefield. So in the mission we just played, your hammers deployed at round two right in between all of my deployment zones.
Yeah.
So you were basically, they were on their own, and you were bringing the rest of your army to try and
defend them, yeah.
So there's a bit of a decision there to make whether you want to go blue and red, what the pros and cons are depending on the victory condition that you've drawn. So that's the deployment. And then your last card you draw is your twist. So again, you've got another 30 or 40 cards, and these just add a unique twist to the battlefield. So I think the first one we played was like a knight fight, so it reduced the range of any ranged attacks down to 3 inches.
Yeah.
The one we just played...
reduce the abilities by one.
Yeah, so we'll come on to that when we get through onto the dice. But yeah, it basically reduced the strength of the value of any ability by one, wasn't it? But then you've got other ones here. Dark Omens, Shuffle and Draw, a twist card with a Climate rune mark, and one with a Psychology rune mark. And both of those cards... Well, that's not... It just gives you more twist cards. Hidden Predators basically introduces chaotic beasts onto the battlefield. So these are like twists. I mean, are they twists in Age of Sigmar? What are they called?
They're called twists, yeah.
Yeah, and also in 40k.
In 40k, the twists,
If you're familiar with them, I think you'd be familiar with these. So then that is the battlefield setup.
What I really like about these cards is, like, we played that last game that we played just before we started recording the podcast. We obviously had the attackers and defenders, and I had to keep my hammers alive, and then my deployment map obviously kind of... bought my hammers kind of very near all your deployed stuff. Imagine how different that game would be with a different deployment map. There's like so many different combinations.
The replayability, it will probably be a while before you end up with the same conditions in the game again.
Yeah,
you're right. And that just makes it interesting. And I suppose as well, if you want to take multiple warbands through a campaign, you don't want to be playing the same missions over and over again. And also as well, with Age of Sigmar, you know what battle plans are going to come up,
mm-hmm.
and you can build lists that work for those battle plans. So, for example, what's the one where you need heroes and artifacts and things?
A place of arcane
something
power,
like that. Yeah. So when you're building your list going to a tournament, you need to consider that battle plan because you're going to have those sort of units in place. With this, because you don't know, it could be any combination of these deployments, maps, twists. It's less important that, I mean, there's not much army building, although you can choose which models you bring in for different points. It's a 200 point limit, isn't it? But I think it puts the focus more on the game and the tactics and your strategy in the game and your way, how you react to different circumstances in the game, rather than all the pre-game planning you can do in a game like Age of Sigmar.
It's a lot like Warhammer Underworlds in that aspect, where you kind of got a set warband, but your tactics will change depending on...
I mean,
it's even more tactical than in Warhammer Underworlds, because your battle plan's always going to be different. Your victory conditions are always going to be different.
That's what I mean. I mean, even in Underworlds, you spend a lot of time building your deck.
And
then you have your board. So you already have a lot of work done before the game starts, how you set up, how you deploy on your board, where you're going to put your objectives, what your deck's looking like. Whereas in this, you're going in blind, so you have to think on your feet. And I think it's interesting. It's a change of pace. It's a much more intense game, I think. Then you're ready to start the game then. So I think in most missions there's four battle rounds. I think there's a few odd ones where they keep going until the conditions are there.
Well, the first game we had was basically whoever killed all the hammers first won. So it could have gone on for any number of battle rounds. I think actually it came to a conclusion in battle round four, ironically.
So you start off. So the first you do is you have a hero phase. I think you have then a reserve phase. And then you have a combat phase. So in the hero phase, you have six dice, you roll your dice, the opponent rolls their dice, and you're looking for doubles, triples, and quads, and singles. And basically what you do is the person with the most amount of singles has priority.
Mm-hmm.
You also have a wild dice, so once you've determined who's got priority, both players get a wild dice, and the person with priority can spend that dice, so they can either add it as another single, or they can add it to one of their doubles to turn it into a triple, or their triples to turn it into a quad. Once they've spent their wild dice or banked it, because you can keep it if you like and not use it, and then it's available next turn to use instead, then the opponent that didn't get priority can do the same with their wild dice. So they can steal priority basically, because you can add it as a single, and then you end up with more singles, and you have priority. And priority is interesting, because if you've got priority, you choose who goes first, who activates first.
And what's cool about it is when you roll those six dice, it's you kind of want to see a load of singles, because you want to, you know, you might want to take priority.
Yeah.
But then all your abilities are linked to the amount of doubles, triples, and quads that you've got, so you kind of want a lot of those as well.
Yeah.
But if you're getting a lot of those, you're probably going second.
Yeah.
So
it's a trade off, and that's where you have to think on your feet, because you don't know what dice you're going to roll anyway.
No.
And you might not have the ability to steal priority. So it's interesting. I think it creates that sensation that you are fighting for your life on the ground with your warband. You know, whatever's happening, is you've got to react to that. So I like it. Once you determine priority there, and then it's the reserve phase. So all the thing you do in the reserve phase is you just look on the deployment map again. And like we mentioned earlier, some of your battle groups don't turn up until certain rounds, so that's what you figure out in the reserves phase. And then you go straight to the combat phase, and that's where the person who goes first then can choose a model and activate it, and you get two actions. You can move, you can attack, you can disengage, you can do any combination of those actions. You can do multiple moves, multiple attacks, and in between those actions, you can use a single ability, unless you're the last man standing, in which case you can use multiple abilities. So your abilities are, there's some generic abilities that everybody has. So these are like Rush, add one to your movement characteristic until the end of your activation, so that's on a double. Onslaught, add one to your attacks. Triple, you can heal a little bit. Another triple is Inspiring Presence. And this is interesting here, Dave, because this one has a rune mark next to it for the leader. So that's most of the abilities have a combination of rune marks against them, and this just allows you to see which abilities can be used by which characters in your warband.
So, for example, on that universal abilities, that triple, which is Inspiring Presence, the only person who can use that is one with the leader rune mark.
Yep.
They're the only ones that can do that inspiring presence.
And then the, on the warband specific abilities list, you have quite a lot of different rune marks that correspond to different members of your warband. But there's a combination of doubles and triples and quads on there as well. So these are, when you're looking at your six dice you rolled and your wild dice, these are the abilities you're looking to try and use during that round.
Yeah.
And you'll spend your, so if you rolled a double four, double four and a quad six, you can basically use the quad ability and a double ability. You can also use quads on triples and doubles.
Yeah, so say for example you banked a quad because you want a certain character to do a certain powerful move, but then that character gets taken out, like Jay said, you can use that quad as a triple instead.
Yeah.
I mean, you've kind of wasted a dice.
Yeah.
But that might be the best thing to do at that moment in time.
Yeah, that might be your only option. So basically, you go backwards and forwards, activating characters, performing those actions. I won't go into too much detail, I don't think, about them. It's pretty easy. You move your movement characteristic, you can climb up stuff, you can jump, you can fall off edges. It's all handled quite simply in the book. I wasn't... I thought the way that we talked about earlier on, but I like the way you move around the battlefield. I think it's quite straightforward and quite simple, but there's still quite a lot of depth to it as well. Attacking is interesting. A bit of a different than what you might be used to with 40k.
Very different, yeah.
Age of Sigmar. So basically, on your character's little stat card, they have a little box table with their weapon abilities in. You basically roll a number of dice equal to what it tells you on there. And depending on what your strength is compared to the target's toughness, you're looking for a 3 if you're stronger than their toughness, a 4 if you're the same, or a 5 if they're tougher than your strength. And that's it. You just roll.
You can't get much more straightforward than that, can you?
So for example, here, my let me get my guy over here. So my Spire Stalker has got a blade. He gets four dice with it, so I'll roll my 4 dice if I decide to take an attack action. I'm strength 4, so I compare that to one of Dave's Iron Golems. I'm fighting his...
So you could be fighting... I can't remember the names to my guys.
Fighting your Golem, are you?
Yeah, my here you go, my Drill Master. So you're fighting my Drill Master, who's a toughness of 4.
So my strength 4, toughness 4, I'm looking for 4s. I roll my 4 dice, I get 1 4, 1 5, 1 1, and 1 6. So I've got 2 4 pluses there, so I do my damage, and here I can see the damage of my blade is 2. So I just do 2 flat damage to you. There's no armor rolls, no save rolls, just 2 damage to you. What's interesting is if I rolled a 6 to hit, I crit. And most weapons have 2 damage values. The first one is just what they do on a normal
hit. Flat normal damage.
And then the second damage value is what I would do on a crit. So in this case, I would do 4 extra damage on a crit. And that's it. That's how you fight. And I love it. I think it's great.
Yeah, there's no rolling for armor saves or anything like that. You've just done that damage.
Yeah.
The way they kind of counter that is you have, whereas in 40k and Age of Sigmar, you might have a few wounds.
Yeah.
In this game, I think the lowest value I've seen so far is 10.
So I've got a few with 8, but yeah.
Oh, you've got a few with 8 wounds.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So 8, I think, is the minimum. Then you've got like my monster, like my ogre, has got 30 wounds.
Yeah.
So he's not rolling armor saves, but he's got 30 wounds and a toughness of 5.
Yeah. So I mean, that's it. I've fought your ogre twice now. And he's very hard to take down. I have to do multiple attack actions with multiple characters to try and dent him.
Yeah.
And in most cases, I'm looking for 5s on my hit dice, rolling 4 or 5 dice at a time because you can buff it a little bit with some of the abilities.
Yeah.
I'm looking for those crits. But I really like it. The combat's so fast. You basically can tie up models by moving in space contact with them or within an inch of them. And then you have to force them to make disengage actions to move back, or you can pin them in place so that you're waiting for reinforcements to arrive. I think the combat's really... Well, another interesting part of the combat as well is the height of the battlefield.
Yeah.
So I know, sitting with the Corvus Cabal, they can dive off of higher platforms and get bonus to their attacks
and stuff.
Yeah. There's also a cover mechanic, so if you're standing next to certain obstacles, you can get +1 to your
toughness. Or if you're fighting up, like there was a point in that last battle where I had my Drillmaster with a 3-inch range weapon.
Yeah.
She was flinging it up to your guy who was on a level above. But because you were a level above, you got an extra toughness, an extra point of toughness.
So he just made that wound, that hit roll. You needed a 5 then rather than a 4.
And then a 4, yeah.
But there was no cover save or anything like that. It just made it harder for you to wound me. And then that's it. Once every hero's activated, you lose all of the dice you've not spent so far, and you go back around then. So it's another hero phase. We both roll the 6 dice again. If you still had a wild dice left over from the previous battle round, you get an additional one now, so you'll have 2 wild dice to use. And you keep going until the mission ends.
Yeah. I found it really fast-paced, really fun. You soon find yourself in combat, and you soon take your models off.
Yeah, don't get too attached to your models.
No. And each, I mean, we've only played with the 2 warbands so far, but straight away they've got like their own flavour to them, and you can see how they work. My guys are really slow, but they've got a slightly higher than average toughness.
Yep.
Whereas your guys are, I mean, some of your guys are moving like 10.
Yeah, well, this guy was moving 8, wasn't he? You can move twice, so it's a 16-inch move. You can also add 1, you can add 2 to that if you use the Rush universal ability, so it adds 1 to his move characteristics, so he becomes movement 9, so he's got an 18-inch move. You could also, instead, you could use his Swift Climb, which basically means that he can just move up and climb without spending any movement, so he gets even further across the board into a good position then for the next battle round where he wants to leap down. But to combat that, my guys don't tend to be as strong. Most of my guys were strength 3 and only toughness 3 as well.
Quite a few abilities that gave you some extra attacks though, so it kind of balanced it a little
bit.
Yeah,
so the leader has this one Grizzly Trophy, so on a triple he can add 1 to the attack's characteristic of any attack action that has a range of 3 or less made by a visible friendly fighter that while they are within 6 inches of him, so he can buff everybody else. And then obviously everyone's got access to the Onslaught one, which adds 1 to their attacks. The one I quite like using at the moment is Sweeping Attack, so I've used this one quite a few times against you now, Dave, haven't I? So this one is... Yeah.
It's a triple, so it's a slightly higher than average ability.
Yeah, but it basically, as long as my Strike Talon is on a ledge, you can basically make a bonus move and a bonus attack, and then attack and attack again.
Very thematic.
Yeah,
so swooping down from a building.
The one I've not used yet, Dave, is this one, Death from Above. So this is a quad, so this is any Corvus Cabal character can use this one. And it's basically the same thing, but I get to add +1 to the strength of my attack.
And you can use that on every character, whereas you're the one you first mentioned, you can only use on that one guy.
Yeah, so the swooping attack has a rune mark that only my Shrike Talon has. This is a guy with the wings, who I thought was the leader, but he's not actually the leader of the Corvus Cabal. And then the quad one, the Death from Above, is just the only rune mark that has is the Corvus Cabal rune mark, so any of my guys can use that one.
Excellent.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to starting a campaign with these guys.
I'm looking forward to seeing what all the other... Because I know Matt's already built his Cypher Lord, probably went on holiday. I know he's really keen to have a battle with us and try out, because he's not played it yet. I think he's really going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
I don't think you need to be a fan of any of the Warhammer systems to play this and enjoy it.
It's very different. It doesn't really borrow anything from Age of Sigmar.
No. No. And very quickly, you're going to have a painted warband, I think. I mean, I've painted 2 guys already in a couple of nights.
It's 8 or 9 models in the warband there, yeah. And there's some variety the way you can build them as well. I enjoy this game a lot more than I enjoy Kill Team.
Yeah, ditto. I mean, I like Kill Team, but I don't think it's different enough to 40k. It's just a mini version.
Yeah.
This is its own standalone thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's set in the Age of Sigmar universe, but its mechanics are completely different. Completely different. So yeah, I'm looking forward to what else they're going to do for Warcry. And I say that, I mean, we're still going to be playing these stuff out of the box.
Yeah,
well, we got all the missions and stuff.
Yeah, I'm half tempted to pick up the Squig card set.
Yeah, I've been meaning to get the Iron Jaws one.
Yeah,
I haven't. I wanted to get the Stormcast as well, but the Stormcast are all hunters, and I don't have any of those built yet. Well, I don't really have any of them. But the Iron Jaws have got painted,
yeah.
And apparently they're pretty cool in Brutes and Ardboys in Warcry. So yeah. I wouldn't mind getting them and trying them out. They could be cool. And it's good to have all these options to have all your current factions in.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Sylvaneth for making an appearance.
Yeah, because they don't currently have a pack, do they?
They don't currently have a pack. I mean, they're not the only ones without a pack.
No,
But yeah, it would be nice to use some Sylvaneth in there. Like, I think the Underworld's Warband would look quite nice. A lot of individual fighters there. Yeah, I mean, I can see different things they could add because there's no magic in it yet.
No.
So they could add some sort of casting abilities. That would be quite cool. Also, there are... I know the Untamed Beasts have the Beasts rune mark.
Yeah.
So we first discovered that because they can't go through doors. They're not Velociraptors. But what I did notice as well, there was mounts. So I don't know... Oh, the eyes and F. I bet the eyes
never got mounts.
Yeah.
Mounts,
I bet the squig hoppers are mounts as well. Yeah. So, yeah.
And there's a gargantuan.
Yes, there is, yeah. Which we not I'm not seeing any gargantuan models yet, but maybe they'll have trolls or ogres or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's good.
So yeah, if you guys have played Warcry, let us know. Send us a tweet at Sprues and Brews or head on to facebook.com/Sprues and Brews. Let us know what you think about Warcry. We're definitely going to be talking about this for weeks, I think.
Yeah.
Especially next week, once Matt... not next week, in a couple of weeks' time, when Matt's had a game. Because I think Matt will have a few comments that he'll want to add about it. And may I also add, when I was putting that scenery away, that is the spikiest scenery I've ever handled.
Oh, it is spiky, yeah. Really nice scenery, though. Okay. I spent maybe about 4 or 5 hours putting all that together. Really, really cool. Matt did leave me a few instructions before he left. Matt's normally the guy who builds all the scenery. So don't glue this bit, don't glue that bit. So there are a few bits in there. So the ladders and things like that, don't glue them on because depending on what deployment map you get, they may go in different positions.
Yeah.
Also, there's a bit with the Sigmar's head. There's like a...
platform.
Yeah, it reminds me of the Breath of the Wild, Zelda.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What are the goblins? Gobbles, I can't remember what they are.
I don't know what they're called.
Don't glue that on, because in a lot of the missions, well, both missions we play so far, the head appears on its own, but in some of the missions, that little platform is put on top of it. Yeah. So, and then you also get the walkways, which are just separate pieces that you put over different platforms later on. So, yeah, so just pay attention when you're building the scenery so you don't end up limiting what deployment maps you can use.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's really, really good. You basically got a mixture of walls you can climb up. These is like portcullis-looking doors. They're counted as doors. And then there's archways. And these just have really straightforward rules. So you can move through doors, you can move through archways, as long as you can move through doors as long as you're not a beast. The platforms are 3 inches tall. So there's a really, really cool rule, falling. So basically, if you end your activation halfway up towards a platform or halfway up a vertical surface, you roll a dice to see if you fall off. On a 1, you fall off. You also fall off if you've been critted while you're standing on a platform. Yeah. So if you're on a ledge or on a higher platform and you get critted, you also have to roll a dice to see if you fall off on a 1.
You fall off anyway, and then you roll to see if you take damage from that fall.
Yes, that's right. So yes, you're right. And it's a 4 plus, I think, you take damage, and on a 6, you take more damage. So
yeah,
it's really, really cool. It just adds a bit more... These guys fighting over this
falling off buildings. Falling off buildings. You can even, if you've got some of the spiky small terrain pieces,
deadly terrain,
and you fall on that, you do take even more damage.
Get impaled. Yeah.
So it's really cool.
There's also that cool rule where, so basically, an obstacle is anything that isn't more than an inch high. So there's these little scattered bits of ruins and broken pillars and things which aren't quite an inch high. You can move over them freely because they're less than an inch high. And if you're within half an inch of them, you get +1 to your toughness.
Yeah.
So like cover. So you can just imagine the fighters ducking and diving around these pillars and rocks and things. Really, really cool. Really, really simple, but really, really cool.
Excellent. I think that's rounded up the start of this podcast. Quite a big hobby update. It was kind of a mini Warcry feature in there.
Yeah, there was. But I'm not finished on hobby updates.
Oh, sorry. Of course.
I've got more hobby updates. Sorry.
Carry on.
That's Warcry that we've been playing. But we've also been playing some warm-up games for our Blood Bowl League.
Oh, yes.
So
yeah.
I've had 2 Blood Bowl games now. Both games against the Skaven. So this is using my Wood Elf team, the Wild Bodkins. In the first game, I believe I lost 2-1 to the Skaven against my brother. It was quite close until the end. I can't remember now how they got the... I'm pretty sure Lee scored his second try while I was receiving the ball. I was attacking, so he got it off me and scored. But that's okay. A rematch. I fought them again. This game was brilliant. So I was kicking in the first half. Lee was receiving. I managed to swipe the ball off Lee, get it all the way up to the end zone.
Mm-hmm.
only to lose it again for Lee to get it all the way back down to my end zone. He needed to go for it once. I think it was a go for it, and he rolled a one. Rerolled it, rolled a one in the eighth turn of the first half. So it's just a single drive. So we went into the second half at 0-0, which was good because I was receiving in the second half. So I was hoping to grab the ball, keep it for a bit, and score 1-0. Unfortunately, we were playing in sweltering heat. So basically, when my team came on at the beginning of the second half, you rolled a dice for every player, and on a roll of one, they were knocked out by the heat.
Like, exhausted.
Yeah. So, six of my players rolled a one. So, there was four Lines Elves and one Tree Man going up against, I think it was like 10 Skaven. Mental. I did really well. I almost scored. I got about three or four squares away from the end zone. And I had a difficult decision to make. I had no rerolls left. I had to either make two dodges, a 4+ dodge, and then a 2+ dodge, or a 1-dice block. If I made the 1-dice block, I could have scored. So I thought, I'll do the 1-dice block, and rolled attacker down. No rerolls, lost the ball. Lee was then able to get the ball, and because I only had four Lines Elves and a Tree Lord on the pitch, he was basically, I couldn't catch him, so he just kept holding the ball for eight turns and then scored 1-0. But it was a great game.
That sounds really cool. I've not had a game since we played the other week, but I'm kind of holding out for the Lizard Men.
Yeah, you were using the Dwarf Giants versus the Halflings, weren't you?
Yeah.
That game was quite bloody.
Well, I soon quickly realised that my best way of winning was just take out all the Halflings.
Yeah.
So I did.
Yeah, there weren't many Halflings left.
I think I won 2-0 in the end. Because Dwarves aren't very quick.
No.
But it was a really fun game. I really enjoyed it.
Blood Bowl's cool. I'm finding Blood Bowl's one of those games that when you're playing it with an opponent like around the table rather than on the PC where you want to win against a computer. But when you're playing against a human being on the other side of the table, just go with the flow.
Yeah.
Try your best. Because at the end of the day, the sun comes out and half your team doesn't show up.
I think the fun thing about Blood Bowl is it's so unpredictable.
Yeah.
Like, every dice game is unpredictable, but it doesn't get much more unpredictable than Blood Bowl.
The point of Blood Bowl is it's unpredictable.
Yeah.
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 So just don't get too attached to the result and just enjoy the game is what I'm finding. Because it's cool, very swinging. You could have the best team, the best skills, the best plan, and you slip on some wet grass.
Yeah. And then lose 3-0 or something.
Yeah. So that was Blood Bowl. But that's not all a hobby day. We've done even more. It's been a really good week for hobby this week, I think. We've done
I've kind of forgotten about all this.
How can you forget about this next one? Oh,
I know what it's going to be. Yes, of course.
So Matt has been, for a while now, Matt has been saying, come round. We need to start our Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay campaign. So we did. We ran around, didn't we, last Saturday?
Yeah, we did.
There was four of us. Matt was Games Master.
Yep.
And we were just playing through the... Now, it's a shame Matt's not here because Matt does know a lot more about this, but we were playing through the introduction campaign. So it comes with a set of preset characters and a little narrative to follow just to get into the game, learn the mechanics of the game. Matt does a cracking job,
Games Master. Yeah, he does. He's really good.
I don't know where all this like theatre comes from. It's like, first meet it, I think, oh, he doesn't seem like the kind of guy. He's really, really good. Does all the voices, all the actions. It proper sort of like,
yeah,
I think he involves you in the game. So, So Matt had prepared everything for us. He'd got these character sheets, and they're really, really nice quality, aren't they? These pre-prepared character sheets.
They're superb.
You get a bit of background on there. You get some motivations, some secrets. You get your starting equipment, your skills, your stat sheets and stuff. So, Dave, who were you playing?
I was playing a female witch hunter called Elsa. Elsa, I think it was. She was cool. So one of my motivation was it was all for the greater like good of Sigmar. So she wanted to unite Sigmar. And she was supposed to be this really good hotshot with her pistols, which we'll talk about in a moment. Who were you playing as, Jay?
So I was playing as a high elf merchant. So I was the son of a merchant prince from Ulfwyn. My mother was a princess from that realm. That what are they called? The realm of Ulfwyn, province of Ulfwyn. I didn't have many skills, but unique abilities. But my stat line was quite good for an elf, so I had good weapon skill, good initiative, good ballistic skill, good dexterity, that sort of thing. My motivations, I was actually a spy for Ulfwen, and I was spying on humanity. But I'd fallen in love with humanity. So I'd been in Outdoor for 2 years, and I'd seen the worst of humanity, I'd seen the best of humanity, and I was just enthralled with humanity. I was just fascinated by them. You know, from the peasants on the street and the street urchins to the high lords, all the dramas that played out in the life of a human. Because obviously, being from Ulfwen, this was all alien to me, all new to me. These humans lived their lives so fast, you know, compared to an elf. They were a whippersnapper one day, the next day they were an old man, a blink of an eye to an elf. And I was just enthralled by it all. I wanted to escape from my father's sort of. My father wanted me to carry on the family business, a merchant, inherit all of that. I wanted nothing to do with that, so I was trying to escape my father. Unfortunately, the character that I see my character had a sort of bit of a story arc with wasn't involved in this session because we didn't have enough players. So it would be interesting to see how that played out, but never mind. Alongside us, we had a dwarf slayer.
Yep.
He was an old jewellery maker who turned dwarf slayer, Gunnar the dwarf, who liked beating things up and charging into fights. Got us into a bit of trouble, but he was good. And then we had a human mage, an amber mage. Amethyst mage.
Who caused quite a stir.
Using magic straight away.
Using magic, getting the attention of the common people who thought he was some kind of,
witch.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it all started, we went into out of the tavern, and there was a bit of entertainment going on. Some people disliked the entertainment, started throwing a few pieces of rotten fruit.
Yeah.
And then someone, threw an axe, escalated quite quickly.
The slayer ran in. Beating
up one of the entertainers. Lee started casting spells with his amethyst wizard. I was just leaning in the archway of the tavern, just watching all this, mesmerised by it all.
I tried to defend the mage.
Well, we said, go in there, Dave. Break it up, Dave. Fire your pistol in the air to break it up.
Yeah. What actually happened is I unholstered my pistol... didn't roll enough on whatever check it was to see if I could fire it in the air, and ended up blowing somebody's chest open, which really caused a ruckus.
Yeah. And then all the guards ran in then, didn't we? We were arrested.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's quite a cool... it's just a D100, so you're quite familiar with this. You're playing D&D, and you're basically just looking for underneath your stat. There was a cool momentum sort of mechanic, so that, for example, where Andy charged in with his dwarf,
you got a bonus, tokens, didn't you, to your attack.
So you got bonuses if you kept momentum.
You basically got more chance of rolling under the higher those values are.
Yeah. My brother Lee has since read a lot more, and apparently the combat in the game is really, really interesting. And he's recommended to me, because I was thinking about building just another merchant, an elf merchant, because I quite like that character. He said, lean towards combat if you can, because the combat is so interesting. So just a tip there, everyone's playing it. Might be wrong, but that's what Lee thinks so far from reading it. So we got to the end of that campaign. It was really, really good. It was maybe 4 hours or so at Matt's house playing that.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to starting our campaign now.
I really enjoyed it. I mean, I wasn't too keen on roleplay. I'm not a massive fan of it, but I really enjoyed that session. It was really good fun.
Yeah. I think Matt helps just
the way he does.
Sort of reads everything out. So.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to creating a character.
Yeah.
That should be really cool. So
I think that's it for the hobby.
I think you've covered pretty much every faction. Any Battlefleet Gothic? You not played any of that?
No, I've got Vermintide 2, Winds of Magic now. Not played it yet, so I'm looking forward to playing that. That is it. Hobbied out.
I've done all ready for your holiday.
All ready for my holiday. Yeah, got a lot of hobbying.
Ace. Right, that is the end of probably the longest hobby update section we've ever had on this podcast. It is episode 50 after all, though.
Yeah.
So we did have a bit of a feature in there with Warcry. Don't worry, though, we're not finished yet because we've got the news coming up next. On to this week's news. Now, I think I remember back to when the last time we did a podcast on our own, there wasn't an awful lot of news. I think there might be a tiny bit more news this time. But it's still not been a jam-packed week.
It's mental, isn't it?
It is. But then we did have two reveals in 1 week on the last podcast, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, they did that on purpose. They did that on purpose because they knew
we were going to be... Yeah. But let's talk about what's coming out this Saturday. So currently on pre-order, we've got the brand new Codex Space Marine, which was a massive reveal. You know, one day it was revealed, the next day we found out it was going to be on pre-order. So that is currently on pre-order. No, it's not on pre-order yet.
It is on pre-order. Space Marine Codex on pre-order. It comes out on Saturday.
Yeah, it comes out on Saturday. So you've got the Space Marine Codex, you've got the Codex supplements, Ultramarines and White Scars.
Yep.
You've got three sets of data cards, your generic, your Ultramarines, your White Scars.
Yep.
You've got Ultramarine dice, you've got White Scar dice, which are really nice. You've got miniatures, so you've got...
Tigerus or Tigerius.
Chief Librarian Tigerus, or Tigerus. How do you pronounce the White Scar?
Kosaru Khan.
He's coming out. So they're all coming out on Saturday. We've also, this coming Saturday, we've got a whole bunch of pre-orders coming on.
Yeah.
So these are all obviously Space Marine flavoured because we've got lots of Space Marine kits to come out. The main one has got to be the Invictus Warsuit.
This is the little stripped down dreadnought with all the dampening and stealth.
Now I thought he was going to be not super weak.
Like Sentinel type.
Yeah, because he's not got as much armour. That's the whole point of him being stripped back. But the reveal today on Warhammer Community is like basic stats. Obviously not his full rules, but his basic stats. He has 13 wounds, so he's got quite a few wounds. He's still Strength 7, Toughness 6.
13 wounds is more than a regular Dreadnought.
Yeah. Strength 7, Toughness 6. He gets 4 base attacks, and he's got a 10-inch move. That's at full strength. Once he starts losing wounds, he starts dropping on his movement. But a 10-inch movement on a Dread...
That's good. It's 8, isn't it, I think?
It's really cool. And then you add to that, you can deploy 9 inches away from enemy characters because he can infiltrate in, because the point is he's stripped down armour, so he's got all these like sound dampening bits and pieces on him.
So he's only toughness 6 though, so he is a bit toughness weaker because I think your normal dreadnoughts are toughness 7.
Yeah, only toughness 6. He has 2 main weapon loadouts, like his main gun. He's got his like his pistol heavy bolter, which heavy is bolter, cool. Yeah. But you've got a choice between 2 main cannons. So one's your more like horde kind of killing weapon, and your other one is your armour penetrating. Well, I say armour penetrating.
Light armour.
Yeah. So the first one is the Incendium cannon. It's heavy 2d6. It's strength 5, minus 1 AP, 1 damage. So
auto-hitting.
I was getting to that.
I thought you forgot.
No. So heavy 2d6 is really cool at strength 5. And like Jay's just said there...
Ruined. You're surprised.
It auto-hits. So it's like a flamer. But it's got a 12-inch range.
Yeah.
So as you quite rightly pointed out, it's going to be an Overwatch range.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
And Overwatch range. And also, once you've infiltrated, you're going to infiltrate 9 inches away from it.
Yeah, so you're going to be in range of it.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's so good.
Yeah, it's really...
I mean, obviously, it could be pants if you roll 2 ones.
Take 3 of these dreadnoughts with those 3 of those cannons. Yeah.
So that's really cool. Its other cannon loadout is a heavy 6 autocannon, strength 7, still minus 1 AP, but it does 2 flat damage.
Yeah. And also, you got to think as well, with the new combat doctrines that Space Marines get, you can increase those AP values. So the autocannon, for example, would get plus 1 AP in the Devastator doctrine. And the incendiary cannon, is that a heavy weapon? I can't remember.
The incendiary is a heavy weapon.
All right, so it's both. Okay, so but you can increase that to AP minus 2 with the devastated on. I think the ultramarines get a stratagem they can play where one unit can use a different doctrine. So so many command points. So you could use that.
You know, this has upset a few Death Watch players because doctrines was their one of their kind of things, and now all Space Marines have got it.
Well, yeah, but what does that mean? What will happen to Death Watch next then? Because I'm really interested to see what happens to Death Watch, and I'm even more interested to see what happens to Grey Knights.
Yes.
I can see those two armies becoming fantastic if the new Space Marine book is anything to go by from what we've seen so far.
Yeah. They have really pushed with this Invictus Warsuit. They're highly customizable. So if you wanted to run 3 of them, which I know you're very tempted to do at some stage... They're all going to look a little bit different. You can have them with the heavy bolters holstered. You can have them holding it.
Yeah.
I didn't write down what his close combat attack does. I can't remember.
I remember.
Strength, but I know it's flat
2 times strength, AP minus 3, damage 3.
Yeah.
And I think he has 4 attacks on his profile, I think. But he is an Adeptus Astartes, so he gets plus 1 attack on the charge.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool. So, yeah, he's ace. He's up for pre-order on Saturday for release the following weekend. We've also got two returning characters from Shadowspear. So the Captain and the Librarian, which you can currently only purchase in Shadowspear.
Yep.
They're coming out on their Todd. I really like the Librarian. He's such an amazing model.
Yeah, well, I've got... I mean, I think all the Librarians... The original Primaris Librarian is one of my favourites as well. So I've not really... there's not been any draw for me to get this Phobos armed one. I didn't realise they got another lore.
Yes, they do.
So
yeah.
It's like Obscurium or something. Yeah. All on about, so it all buffs the Vanguard units. Yeah. So there is a reason to get a second librarian now. Yeah. I didn't realise.
You'll have your normal Primaris librarian with like your Might of Heroes and your Null Zone.
Yep.
But you could take your Phobos one to I think there's one where it gives them cover saves and all sorts of.
I didn't realise this. There's, as well as that, you need a third librarian because there's actually the chapter specific laws as well.
Yes.
Ultramarines get their own psychic discipline and White Scars get their own psychic discipline as well. It's all building up for this psychic awakening, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It is.
Just wait till Eldar. I wonder if Eldar get, you know, a supplement system for the Eldari with laws for each of the craft worlds.
Oh, be awesome.
Would be good.
That'd be ace. So they're both coming out. And then we've got one other character joining the fray. And it's the Primaris Lieutenant, originally seen in Wake the Dead.
So he's sword
power, the power sword up in the air. It's a Primaris Lieutenant.
So that means there's going to be another week of Space Marine releases then?
It does, because we've got the Eliminators, the Impulsor tank as well, did you notice this week that it was leaked, the Impulsor stats were leaked, that the Impulsor can't carry Gravis armour?
Yes, I saw Marines. That.
Only so you can't put your...
Aggressors in.
Aggressors, yeah.
No, I saw that. What I also thought was thing is we've not seen any of the suppressors yet.
No.
So this was the other unit that came in Shadowspear.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means. What does that mean? There'll be a fourth week? Will they be... Have we just not seen those models yet? Are those models not ready yet? Are they coming further down the line?
I think they must be coming further down the line because we've seen all the Infiltrators, the Eliminators. Yep.
The Infiltrators, they're the other ones, and the Incursors, they must be out the following week as well. Then.
Yeah, they must be out with the Eliminators.
Yeah, and the Impulsor, which makes sense because they're sort of all the Vanguard models, aren't they? So
that's it for 40k. There's no Age of Sigmar, but we don't know a date on this yet. But they did say coming soon is a White Scar Landspeeder for the Horus Heresy.
Yeah.
Funny that obviously you've got all this 40k stuff, and then they go and release. It's not going to have 40k rules. It's pretty cool. I'm not a big fan of the old school Landspeeders, to be honest.
It has a charm. I like it.
I think not a massive fan.
I tell you what I did see. I don't know if we mentioned this last week or it's come out. It was the Dark Angel model.
That was last week.
We talked about that on podcast last week.
I think we might have done, yeah. We did have some breaking news, which actually, Matt's not here this week, but he broke this to us just before we started recording. Over on Humble Bundle, they've got a brand new book bundle up. So if you're new to Humble Bundle, it's a charity-based system where you can pay what you want and you get some content and you can divide up what you donate to different charities, to Humble Bundle themselves or to the developers. So they've got Dark Heresy roleplay books up on Humble Bundle. So if you pay more than $1... then you get 4 books, including the core rulebook. If you pay over $8, this is currently, it does sort of swing up and down a little bit, you get a further 6 books, adding to your roleplay experience. And then if you pay over $15, you get a further 8 books. Oh, yeah, another 8 books. And then $18 or more, you get another 8 books on top of that. So if you're paying over $18, you're getting an absolute ton of content.
I mean, even if you don't play the game, I'm guessing there's lots of lore and background.
There will be.
Yeah,
definitely. We've obviously been talking about roleplay. I think Matt's tempted to pick this up.
Yeah.
$18 for all that literature? It's worth it. I mean, Dark Heresy isn't supported now, is it? Because we've got Wrath and Ruin. Is Wrath and Ruin?
Yeah, but you'd be still playable, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. It looks very Inquisitor heavy as well, which...
Yeah. I think we have played a game of that once.
Have we?
I think so. I don't know if you're involved in that. The Death Watchy one.
Cool. So yeah, that's some breaking news. So if you head on to humblebundle.com, you can purchase those. And that's up for... I think it's only just gone on. So that's going to be up for a while. I'll just see if it's got an end date. So it's up for another 13 days yet. So you've got plenty of time to get involved, even if you listen to this podcast a little bit late. But I think that's old news. I don't think we've got anything else in the news. So a bit more of a quiet week. But like we said, we had two reveals last week. So not even Games Workshop can keep up with some massive reveals. They are teasing a bit more Forbidden Power content.
Yeah,
and there's a new battle plan that's gone up between Zeech and Gloomspite.
Yeah,
I'm hearing rumours after Ogres it could be Zeech getting a new book.
Right.
So that could be some hints. And also the rumour engine this week, I don't know if you saw it with the Stormcast head.
The Smash Stormcast head, yeah.
I think that's from an Ogre kit, personally. I
think you're right, yeah, probably Ogre kit.
So yeah, that's all of this week's news. We're not quite there with the podcast, though, as we've got our top three coming up next, and we've also got the community picks as well. Space Marines are on their way back with a brand new codex. So this week we wanted to know what our top three Space Marine heroes would be. My goodness, there is a lot of them. Some of the community picks that we've had, which we'll read out after this segment, I forgot like half of them. Like, oh yeah, there's that guy. Oh, there's that guy. But it hasn't waylaid my top three. So I'm going to start with my third choice. His career as a Space Marine, as a captain of the Mortifactors Space Marine chapter. Any ideas who he could be?
Captain of the Mortifactors?
I
know this guy. It's not Artemis, is it?
It is, yes. So, Captain Artemis, he is of the Death Watch. He is a legend. He's really cool. I really like his model.
Well, he had the original model was Captain Artemis, wasn't it? The Inquisitor scale one, yeah.
Yeah, he was. He was born on a feral world a century before joining the Death Watch. He was quite valiant as a youth, but he very nearly got killed. and then they realised actually he's quite tough, this guy. So they turned him into a Space Marine. And he worked alongside an Inquisitor for quite a while, and it soon became quite apparent that he was very good at fighting Xenos. He could spot Xenos in you, basically. So he was absolutely ripe for Death Watch material. The biggest thing he's probably done in his career, though, was towards the end of 7th edition. 7th edition? Yeah. When he actually stops Eldrad Ulfwen.
Yeah. What was that box set called?
It was called... I've got it.
This
was
with Eldrad and the Harlequins versus Captain Artemis and his Death Watch.
Yeah. So he, because Farseer Ulfwen wants to cooperate with him to help destroy Sonesh, which he just doesn't, and inadvertently saves hundreds of human lives. Obviously, doesn't stop the rip. I can't remember what it's called.
The rift,
the big rift. But he's still kicking it around, killing Xenos. He's one of the most successful members of the Death Watch. He's a very, very, very cool guy. He could be Primarisified eventually.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. He doesn't have the Necron Blade, does he? He has a normal...
No, he just has a normal...
And a Void Vortex Grenade, doesn't he, or something?
Stasis Bomb.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's gone in 8th edition. I've not really played much of Death Watch with the new book. I haven't got the new book yet. I've only seen bits online. But he does have his cool... Combi Flamer.
Oh yeah, that's weapon. Right. Yeah.
So Captain Artemis is my third choice. What's yours?
Good choice. My third choice is a Blood Angels character, and it is Chaplain Lamartes. So this guy got he used to have an old metal model where he was sort of like doing a weird little dance with his crazy sarcane above his head. Still solid though. And a really cool solid. Really cool death mask. But I love his new model. I say it's new 6th edition model where he's with his jump pack on, he's got his Crozius Arcanum and stuff. Really, really cool model. So Chaplain Lamartes is unique among the Blood Angels because he succumbed to the Black Rage. And when a Blood Angel succumbs to the Black Rage, they basically get death visions of Sanguinius. They're basically some of them believe they are Sanguinius fighting aboard the Ventral Spirit.
Yeah.
They normally don't live very long after that, so they normally they're a bit like slayers, dwarf slayers. They chart, you know, that the chapter herds them into a big unit, sends them against the enemy during a battle, knowing they're going to die, because dying in battle like that is better than surviving and going completely insane.
Yeah.
So that's the Black Rage. So Chaplain Lamartes succumbed to the Black Rage. I can't remember which battle it was that he started succumbing to Black Rage.
Anyway, he survived the battle. So he's, you know, kicking ass in this battle. He survived the battle. So the other chaplains go over to, you know, finish him off or take him back to some tower or something like that. And through gritted teeth, his eyes are all bloodshot, all sweat, drenched in gore. He basically, his own willpower is keeping him sane in this black rage. And he basically instructs them to put him in stasis. So they lock him in stasis. And then at the next battle, they get him out to fight for the Emperor again. And then at the end of the battle, he's like, I'm still okay. Put me back in stasis. And they put him back in stasis. So through strength of will alone, he is holding the Black Rage at bay. And I think he's unique amongst the Blood Angels to do this.
Yeah, that sounds pretty unique.
Mephiston succumbed to the Black Rage, and then he's the librarian character. He succumbed to the Black Rage and then recovered. So he no longer is inflicted with the Black Rage. Whereas Lamartis is inflicted with Black Rage, but he doesn't let it consume
him. He has a tiny bit of self-control in there that's keeping him...
I mean, chaplains are already strong-willed, the, you know, the strongest willed of all the Space Marines. He's just a legend. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure he still has the rule where he gets wounded. He gets extra attacks as he gets wounded. You know, he just keeps fighting.
I think I fought your Lamartis quite a bit, and he always does well on battle.
He does. He has a nice aura where he buffs all the Death Company around him. Yeah. So I like him. Chaplain Lamartis, my third favourite character.
Excellent. My second choice has quite an important role in his chapter. But he is a chapter master, so it kind of comes with the territory. But not many chapter masters have got the pressure of holding one of the darkest... Well, I say it might not be that dark, really. But one of the biggest secrets in the 40K universe. And that is Azrael.
All right.
Because he is the only one who knows the secrets of the Dark Angels.
Of course, the Dark Angels have the inner circles, don't they? And as you get promoted through the ranks, you get...
You learn more and more about the secret of the chapter. Only he knows the full story.
What could it be?
I was reading about him a little bit more just to for this podcast. And he's just ace. I think he's a really cool character. I definitely hope he gets a new Primaris character, because I'd like him to leave my Dark Angels.
He's the thing with Azrael's model, it's a really, really nice model. Even if they just made it a little bit bigger, in the same pose, everything, it would look great. It's just it's too small now, because he's holding his sword in the air, isn't he? And does he have his plasma pistol or combi plasma gun or something, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then he has the little watcher following him around with the helmet, doesn't he? The lion helm.
Yeah. So, I think he seems to me like a very sort of quiet character. Not maybe as bold as some of the other chapter masters.
Like Logan Grimnar
and such. He's a very deep character. And there must be a lot of pressure on him to keep, you know, the secret of the rock. What's going on?
To hide his treachery, yeah.
He knows the real reason why they're hunting all the fallen, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And I think it could make a really cool story arc, because... Eventually, let's face it, the lion is going to come back. At some point, he's going to come back. I mean, I was reading this article on, I can't remember what the website's called, Fandom, 1 Before 4K Fandom, and it finishes with, even Azrael is ignorant of the chapter's final secret. Deep within the rock, in a chamber known only to the Emperor himself, the lion is fully healed and ready to awaken when the Imperium needs him most.
Well, so it sounds like he's a loyalist then.
Yeah, it does sound like he's a loyalist. So I think he's a really cool character. I definitely want to... Maybe I should convert one up. That'd be quite a cool idea.
Well, you've got the Dark Angels Primaris Sergeant, which is really cool. I think also you can make really cool Dark Angels Primaris with the hooded heads. Mm. I think they'll look really great. Just convert one up. I mean, one of the lieutenants would make a good base.
Yeah.
The sword, change the sword round.
Yeah.
Bit of green stuff cloak.
Yeah. The new Primaris Lieutenant with his sword aloft.
Yeah. So a winged helm. That's really cool. He's got really cool rules as well, because he gets the, an invulnerable save bubble around his helmet, doesn't he? Because isn't that the lion's helmet? The lion's helmet.
Yeah, it is.
Helmet, yeah.
I don't know what his sword. It must be a good sword. I can't remember what the name of the sword is. It's not
and he gets all the normal chapter master rerolls and such.
It's not actually the line sword, though, is it? That's on another
one. No, because Cypher's got that.
Yeah.
I was tempted to add him as an auxiliary unit to my Death Guard. His rules are pretty pants, though. On his own cycle.
Yeah, it's a nice model.
But it's a really cool model. I'd really like to paint him. Yeah. It'd be a great excuse to paint him.
It would, yeah.
So maybe I should take him anyway. You know what I'm like with events. I let my heart rule my head. It's like, it might not be competitive, but I'll take it anyway.
What happened last time?
Yeah. So that was my second choice. What is your second choice?
My second choice is an unusual one because this guy wasn't even on my radar, wasn't even interested in him. For how many years have we been playing 40k, Dave? I've never been interested in this fella until I picked up some books.
Oh, I know.
I read these books, and this character is brilliant. It's Abaddon. First captain, well, he was first captain of the Black Legion. Sons of Horus.
Yeah.
He's now War Master of the Black Legion. Really, really cool. I mean, I can't go into all the detail about him, but if you read the Aaron Dembski-Belden books, the Abaddon trilogy, so there's two books out so far. If you don't know much about this character, or you're not really interested in the character, read those two books, because there's so much depth to him. It's really, really cool reading about him. So I've got a real soft spot for Abaddon now.
How can you have a soft spot for Abaddon?
But it's not all black and white. This is it. It's all interesting. It's not. It's really, really good. He's not just a bad guy. There's so much more to him than just the arch villain of the setting. It's something. It's really, really cool. I cannot wait for that third book to come out to complete the story arc. There's so many cool scenes in that where, you know, they go out to find him, he's hidden the vengeful spirit, the Talon of Horus, all the history and all that. Oh, it's so good. And then they made his new model. Oh, and his new model is so cool. I haven't painted him yet. I cannot wait to
paint him. And you know what? I was reading some Death Guard Tactica, and quite a few people have added him to the Death Guard list because he has the Nurgle keyword.
Yeah, he does, yeah.
So I was like, you know, maybe future Death Guard army, sneak him in there with Mortarion.
Yeah,
that'd be amazing.
Yeah,
he wouldn't get his rerolls though, because a lot of his rerolls are based on Black Legion. Black Legion does give a morale aura which affects all heretic stuff.
He's a bit like a Gulliman in that regard, where he'll buff Black Legion, but he also buffs General Chaos as well. Yeah, so Abaddon is my second favourite Space Marine.
Excellent. My top choice, I think...
Second choice?
No, I've done my second choice. My second choice was Ezreal.
Who was your first choice? Oh, yeah, of course. Oh, you're one ahead of me, aren't you?
Yeah, I started.
I thought I had Parry.
My top choice, I don't think there's any doubt who the greatest Space Marine is. I mean, the guy launched a crusade in the Emperor's name. He is currently leading... He's the boss man right now, while the Emperor's kind of, well, you know, being the Emperor. And that's Gulliman. I mean, he's got a fantastic model. I've been reading the Dark Imperium books.
Yeah, he's good. Yeah.
He's really good. And he's a very relatable character, I think.
This is what I found. See, I was the Ultra. Ever since we started playing 40k, the Ultrarines never appealed to me at all. I wasn't interested. They're too vanilla, the goody-goody tissues. I read a lot of the Horus Heresy novels. I've not read them all, but I've read a lot. And I've read all of the Ultramarines books, all the ones with the Ultramarines in, all the ones with Gulliman in. And out of all the legions, I thought Blood Angels would be my favourite legion that are represented in the Horus Heresy series. I've not really clicked with the Blood Angels that have been represented in the book so far, apart from Zephon in Master of Mankind, I thought was epic. Out of all the legions to read about and all the Primarchs to read about, I've enjoyed reading about the Ultramarines and Gulliman. Because he's got so much character and there's so much to him.
The biggest thing for me about Gulliman's character is he doesn't really get all this, like, bowing to the Emperor and basically seeing him as, like, a god. He doesn't believe in all that. And you would think as the regent of the Imperium,
well,
he'd be faith incarnate, but he's not.
Compared to him in the Horus Heresy series, I mean, when they fought the Emperor had fallen and he just basically wanted to keep the Emperor's dream alive, he wanted to keep humanity together, Imperium Secundus. So he was quite not optimistic or almost naive in the Horus Heresy series. There was an optimism to him, I thought.
Mm.
But there was also, you could really relate to him. He was the underdog in a lot of the books that I've read. It was really, really cool. in the current setting, especially in those Dark Imperium books, you're right, there's a darker side to his character now. He's a bit more weary of what's happened to the Imperium. He's more resentful, I think, of the Emperor. I mean, you never find out what he said to the Emperor.
No, well, he's one of the only people in the current setting that, you know, he went into the throne room and came out and started the Indominus Crusade and he got the Emperor's sword.
Yeah.
You don't know what was said in that room.
No, but he's not happy about something.
No.
And I think that adds just another page to his book. And
yeah.
He's a really, really interesting... Your initial... preconception about him being just a bit boring compared to other characters in the setting, it's not. I think he's a really, really interesting character.
If you've got any interest in what we're sort of read Dark Imperium, the first book that came out when the 8th edition came out, because it's brilliant. I really enjoyed it.
It does start, doesn't it, after the Horus Heresy, because it's him and Fulgrim initially, isn't
it? Yeah. Fighting at the very beginning of the book, and then it speeds up then to the 8th edition setting.
Yep.
So yeah, there was no doubt Gullman was top of my list.
Yeah, no, well, he's good. I mean, yeah, some would argue he's not a Space Marine, technically.
He's not a Heretic Astartes. He's not a Abaddon, is he?
Abaddon still has the Astartes key. I think actually Gullman has the Astartes key, to be fair. And his model's great. Really, really fantastic amazing. Model. And he's awesome on the battlefield in the game.
He just needs support. He's outnumbered by Demon Primarchs.
He is, he does. He needs Sanguinius to come and rescue him.
He needs a lion. Your top choice, Jay, finish us off.
My top choice. Well, it's not a Primarch, although I do have a soft spot for Sanguinius, obviously. It's not a Primarch. This is another character who I've always liked. And I've always had a soft spot as well for his parent chapter, the Imperial Fists.
Oh.
But this character is Sigismund. First captain of the Imperial Fists, first High Marshal of the Black Templars. Best swordsman in the Imperium, and equal to some of the Primarchs in the dueling pits during the Horus Heresy. Loyal to, you know, one of the most loyal characters in the book. He is the Emperor's Champion. Dorne names him Emperor's Champion in the Siege of Terror. First captain of the Imperial Fist. I've not read any of the Siege of Terror books yet. I've not started that series of books yet, so I don't know how heavily he features in that one, but he's in snippets of the books I have read.
Mm-hmm.
He's also in the Abaddon trilogy, so I don't want to give any spoilers away, but there's a scene with Sigismund in the, I think it's the second book, and I remember reading it, and Sigismund, one of my favourite characters. And I read the scene and I was disappointed. I was really gutted that it didn't go the way I was hoping it would go because it was Sigismund. And I was like, in my head, I had built Sigismund up to be this. And I was like, I was just a bit disappointed at how it went. A few chapters later, Abaddon retells that scene. Oh my gosh. It was amazing. And I remember finishing that book thinking, I'm so glad that bit was in it because it really, you don't need to be disappointed. Really, really good. He's got his black sword. He's basically like 1,000 years old in that book. It's so good. Sigismund, my favourite.
That's cool.
I don't want to give any spoilers away, but I so badly want to tell you what happens.
I do you know, one of my biggest hobby regrets is not keeping up with the Horus Heresy series. I want to get involved in the Siege of Terror, because obviously, I think you can enter those, can't you?
You can. So, the last one I read was A Buried Dagger, which is the last book before the Siege of Terror starts. So, I've not read any of the Siege of Terror books yet. Certainly The Buried Dagger, there's a lot in that
you would
enjoy more if you'd read at least some of the other books.
Yeah.
I don't know about The Siege of Terror. I suspect there's probably online somewhere, because there's quite a lot of like satellite books which just tell a specific battle or you know, arena, where, and there's a few I think that are critical to, like, on a critical path. So you obviously want to read the first three books. You want to read The Flight of the Eisenstein. And then there's probably some key books that you should
Master
read.
Master of Mankind,
yeah, on the way to the Siege of Terror. But you probably don't need to read them all. You can probably come back to a lot of them. I listened to them on Audible.
Yeah.
Audible. Is it Jonathan Keeble?
Keeble, yeah, I think it is.
He narrates them really, really well.
I really can't get into audiobooks and dramas. I don't know what it is. I don't think my brain's capable of taking it in. I have to read a good physical book.
What's your favourite Space Marine model then, Dave?
My favourite Space Marine model, Gulliman's got to be up there, hasn't he? Oh, man. I don't know.
Maybe Scythe's good, isn't he?
Scythe's really cool if I was looking at a Heretic. I really like that model. I'll tell you what I do really like. I really like the Lord of Contagion model. I've got him painted.
Is he really the guy with the big axe?
Yeah, came in the starter box.
Yeah. The Nurgle models are quite characterful, though, aren't they?
Yeah,
the
Space Marine
models. I think nowadays, Space Marine models are really, really good in general, aren't they?
But... Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Why. Who's yours?
Well, one of my favourite Space Marine units, the kit, was the Sanguinary Guard.
Oh, yeah.
I really like the Sanguinary Guard. I think there's some really, really cool Forge World Space Marine models. Really, really cool. I couldn't give you a favourite one of those.
If we were talking units, going back to Dark Angels, the Death Knights. Death Knights?
Are these the ropes? Are these the Deathwing Terminators?
Deathwing Terminators.
With the flails and maces and the shields.
Yeah, they're really cool.
They are nice. I love Terminators in general. I wish Terminator... I mean, they did with the Black Legion, the Chaos Space Marine Terminator box that came out. They sort of redid all the army, didn't they? Modernised them. They look really, really cool. I know we've got Aggressors and Inceptors and things and Gravis armour for the Primaris. I wish they would just bring out new Terminators. You know, Primaris scale Terminators. Because Terminators are so cool. Deep Striking, 2 plus armour, Storm Bolters.
They are really cool. And we need to see some more close combat. We need to see a close combat specialist.
Yeah, proper. With Thunder Hammers and Power Weapons.
Yeah. Ace. So that wraps up this week's top three. We're not quite finished with the podcast yet, though, because we do have a lot of community top three choices to get through, so we'll move on to that next. Moving on to the community choices, there are some excellent choices here, and I think this might be the most amount of replies we've ever had to a top three on Twitter, so thank you to everybody for getting involved. Now, I apologise if I butcher some names here because I'm terrible at reading some character names. But we'll start with Fabius Fulgrim on Twitter. His top three is Gabriel Seth, Nathaniel Garrow, and Garvail Loken.
Interesting choice. Yeah, so you got Garrow and Loken there from the Horus Heresy, and Seth, Flesh Terror.
If we're including traitors, obviously Fabius and Fulgrim get bumped up because, well, that is his Twitter handle.
Yeah. we've had one from Vincent Notley. Oh yes, Dante, the oldest chapter master alive.
He so needs a new model.
Well, his model's just too small, isn't he? People convert out of Sanguinary Guard, but yeah, he does need a new model. Primaris Dante, wow,
that'd be ace.
Marnus Kalgar, yeah. He's in Dark Imperium, isn't he? Because he's a bit upset, isn't he, when Gullion comes back, because he sort of feels a bit of a failure, but and then he dies and comes back as a Primaris. That's good. And then the one tactical marine who survived 3 rounds of shooting without so much as a scratch, only to roll a 1 to hit with a plasma gun and blows his ass out of his ear.
Always happens. Gildan Grotlove Stern says, Loken, Loken, Garrow. Must be a big fan of Loken.
Oh, this is two Lokens. Another Loken. Yeah. In a similar vein, Lancer Chris says, Azrael, Azrael, Azrael.
Oh, well, there you go. Rodri Morgan Smith says Uriel Ventress, Aeonid Fail.
Don't know that guy. The first one's an Ultramarine.
And Bjorn.
Oh, Bjorn. Bjorn the Fell-Handed.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the oldest Space Marine alive because he was alive during the Horus Heresy.
Yeah.
Ah, cool. Leaky Cheese. Is it Leaky Cheese featuring Dave?
Yes.
So, as you've asked for heroes and traitors. Oh, as you've asked for heroes, any traitors in the Imperium are out. Fair enough. So he's put Pedro Cantor. Oh, this is the Crimson Fist guy.
Yeah.
Carib Kulm, who I believe is...
Badab Wars, isn't it?
Yeah, Red Scorpion, Ford isn't World. He?
Yeah.
And Bjorn the Fell-Handed, another one for Bjorn. And from the Horus Heresy, he's put Garvia Loken, Ortek Moore, and Alexis Pollux. Now, Alexis Pollux, sorry, not Pollux. I think Pollux is an Imperial Fist... Ortek Moore, I'm not so sure about. He might be the Iron Warrior that becomes friends with the Imperial Fist.
Pollux, is he the guy who's got a really cool character model?
Big shield.
On the... Yeah, he's ace.
Yeah.
And a big power fist.
Yes.
Yeah. Lehman Puss has got quite a big list, but you'll see why. Bjorn, Loken, Garrow, Bjorn again, Ragnar, Grimnar and Bjorn.
Is he a fan of Space Wolves?
I think he might be a fan of Space Wolves. Yeah, definitely.
Well, we got a lot of these, haven't we, Dave? Darren Winter, he likes Horus Aximand. So I think this might be Little Horus. I think he's one of the Mournival in the Horus Heresy series. Argul Tal, who I believe is... He might be an Emperor's Children, one of the loyal Emperor's Children. Could be wrong. And Acton Cruz, who is a Death Guard, I believe. I think. He might be a Lunar Wolf, actually, Acton Cruz.
Chris Princeps underscore Sleepy says, Lois Dante, is that his full name?
Lois Dante, might be, yeah. I don't know.
Pedro Cantor and Logan Grimnar.
I like Logan Grimnar.
Grimnir, isn't it? Grimnar or Grimnir?
Grimnar. Logan. The old wolf.
Logan.
Lovo, he's got an interesting top three. Grimaldus! That's definitely the name of the Black Templar chaplain, right? Yes, it is.
Cool. Gibbo says, Uriel Ventress. There's that Ultramarine again. Pedro Cantor gets another mention. And Ragnar Blackmane.
Yeah, he's quite popular, isn't he, Pedro Cantor? He's got a nice model with his little snowball, but he's minuscule now compared to the normal Space Marines in Primaris.
Again, he's an absolute surefire for Primaris, surely.
Thought so. Well, he's the only Crimson Fist character, I believe, in the book. Oh, no, there's Courtiers as well. He had a little thingy on hat on. Dave Bass. He's got... Oh, I reckon Cypher may turn out to be one before the story ends, but it's got to be Garrow, Loken, and then Alpharius or Omegan.
Cool. Ashram the Black says Dante, Mephiston, and another shout out for Pedro Cantor.
I think he's Pedro Cantor, Beyond the Fell-Handed. They're the favourites.
Yeah, they're the favourites so far.
Broken Ground says Sarl Tarvitz. He was definitely an Emperor's Children. Garvia Loken and Karn. Now, yeah, Karn is good. He's another character who I've never liked until I read, I think it was a book you bought me, The Butcher's Nails, was it, or something like that?
Oh, right, yeah.
He's in that. He's really, really good.
He's got a really cool 40k model.
Yes, he does now. Yeah, it's been. Yeah, Karn the Betrayer, yeah.
Andrew Befeb says Uriel Ventress messed about for a bit, but came back to good old Codex compliance eventually. Marnus Kalgar for being the first old Marine through the Rubicon, and third choice is Ragnar Blackmane to get some mention.
Ah, Ragnar, yeah. Wargamers Retreat, they have Cypher, Alexis Pollux again. I wonder if that's just based on the model, because the model is really, really good.
Yeah, it is.
And Indric Boreal.
Not sure who that is.
Do Space Marines count? Don't know who that is.
A.A. Ron, Mini Painting HQ, says Dante, in brackets, legend. Mephiston, in brackets, powerful. And Gabriel Seth, in brackets, angry.
Gabriel Seth's actually cool. He knows how bad his chapter is and how uncontrolled his chapter are. He's actually going to keep more than lane. I like Gabriel Seth. Matt Smith has got... Oh, yeah, this is interesting. I love this character as well. And I love the Raven Guard. Caven Shrike.
Cool.
He's a guy with a lightning claws.
Yeah, he is, yeah.
He'd be a good Primaris character.
Yeah, he would.
Scyther Zed. I'm not sure who he is. And Alessio Cortez, the Crimson Fist.
Will Smith, not that one. 30k, he's chosen Aeonid Fail. Danatog?
Dantiok. He might be the Iron Warriors guy, actually.
Okay. And Taric Torgadon.
Torgadon, oh yeah, he's he's one of the... I think he might be an Emperor's Children as well. He's in the Horus Heresy.
Did say I'd butcher some of these names. For 40k, he's gone for Pedro Cantor, of course he did. Titus, who is the Space Marine from the Space Marine video game.
Oh yeah.
That was a good game, actually.
It was a good game.
And Cato Sicarius.
Oh, Sicarius, yeah, he's the captain of the second company, or third company Ultramarines, isn't he? Yeah. Maple has put Gabriel Seth. Another Gabriel Seth. Shrike and Belial. He's the...
Deathwing character. He's really cool. Nice model as well.
Yeah.
Office Painter has said Uriel Ventress. He's another mention. Barfessel? Narek.
Might be a Horus Heresy guy.
And Gabriel Seth.
Oh, Gabriel Seth's getting a bit of love as well. Wow, there's lots of these. Baal. How did I miss Baal? Ragnar Blackmane, put another one on that count, Dave. Dante and Cassius. Ah, Chaplain Cassius.
Yeah.
He's cool. He's got like the half metal plate in his face, isn't he? He's a Tyranid war veteran.
Yeah, he's Death Watch now, isn't he?
I think he does lead a Death Watch kill team, but he's an Ultramarine, isn't he? Yeah.
Who have we got next? Ollie Grimwood. Did you haven't done him, have you?
No, I don't think
so. No. Slaughter, the only likable Imperial Fist.
This was in the Beast Arises series, yeah.
I've not read any
of those.
They
have weird names, don't they, yeah.
Logan Grimnard, the Grey Knight Thumping, Inquisition Quashing, Sleigh Riding Legend. And Pedro Cantor, the original Space Marine hero. Also notice the or at the end of his name. He'll be Primaris soon. Maybe.
Interesting. Yeah, well, him and Cortez are the only Ultra Crimson Fist characters, aren't they?
So. Yeah.
We've done Will Smith. We've done Aaron. We've got David Robinson here. Logan Grimnar, Gabriel Seth, and Dante.
Excellent. Who have we got here? I think you've done all those ones. Maple, you've done. Ball, you've done.
I think that's the last one at the bottom.
David
there.
Robertson. Did you just say his?
Nope. Yes, I've done David Robertson, yep.
David Moore, have you done him?
That's the last one, I think.
There you go. Ragnar Blackmane, Bjorn the Fell-Handed, and Lucas the Trickster.
Oh, he's the one with the original stasis bomb.
Yeah.
Oh, it was Void Bomb or something. He basically killed him and he got the last laugh, didn't he?
Yeah.
He had a cool model as well, with a little lightning claw. And
yeah, he had his hand out.
Loki the Trickster, yeah.
Yeah. I think our Twitter's got a bit confused between names. So yeah. if we miss anybody out, our apologies. They were kind of in order.
It's all halfway down.
The fact you've got an Android phone, not iOS. That's what I'm blaming.
Well, no, we've got one more, Dave. We've got one more. I forgot. Yeah, one last person.
Oh, of course you do. How did we forget this guy?
Matthew Crowther has texted in with his top three. I don't like these top three though, Dave. These you can tell Matt's a chaos player. So he's number three. He's got Magnus. Did nothing wrong. He's number two. Fulgrim. Yeah, he turned into a giant snake monster, but still a nice guy. Questionable, really. He's put an exclamation mark at the end of that, but I would put a question mark.
Yeah, I'd put a question mark.
And number one, well, we agree on this. Abaddon. Well, we agree on that bit. I'm not sure we agree on the next bit. Loyal to the true emperor of mankind.
Matt is practically a chaos god.
Pretty
He's
much.
Never had a space marine army, so he was never going to choose a space marine character.
I want to know who Matt thinks is the true emperor of mankind.
Well,
he must mean Horus.
We'll ask him next week. Oh, no, we can't ask him this. He must be the week after. So there you go. We had lots of community picks there. Now, I completely forgot to pick a new top three before we got carried away. So we'll put it on Twitter in plenty of time for the next podcast. Now, next week is an interesting one because you're away.
I'm away.
Matt is still in Florida. So not quite sure he'll be on episode 51. Be here.
It's got to happen.
It's got to happen. I just don't know who I'll be with.
Show must go on. Because you know next week's going to be a bumper week for news.
It will
so
be.
So you can't miss that show.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we will be back next week in some shape or form. And then the week following that, episode 52, the gang will be together for a full-blown podcast.
Cool.
As always, if you've got any feedback for us, please let us know via our social media channels at Sprues and Brews. Or go on to facebook.com/spruesandbrews. Alternatively, go on to spruesandbrews.com. Post a comment on there. And we also have an Instagram account and a ever-growing YouTube channel. Which we, once everybody's back off the holiday, we've got a few plans in mind for video content.
We've got a few battle reports ready to go as well, haven't we? On there,
yes, so. I think we've got...
got at least one ready to go.
Yeah, can't remember who it was. Was it my Stormcast against your Silver?
Yeah, I think it was, yeah.
Yeah. So we've got more content going on to there. That's youtube.com/spruesbrews. No end in that one. So thank you for listening to this podcast, and we'll be back with you next week. Bye.
Bye.